Streaming live 24/7. RadioInfluence.com.
He got him
in the white trunks.
He heard him.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count.
Wow.
And here comes as a mention. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin
punch
retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
The fourth episode of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series took place on Tuesday of this week, and I am going to recap the five fights that took place on that fight card on this edition of the MMA Report podcast on Radio Influence, along with recapping those five fights. Going to talk about some of the latest news, fight bookings, topics in the world of MMA. Plus, I'm going to have four interviews for you here on the podcast this week. Going to talk to two fighters who will be fighting next Tuesday on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, Everett Sims and Ricky Simon. Plus, going to talk to Josh Marsh, who fights this weekend at CFFC. And I will also chat with Jesse Finney, the CEO of Shamrock FC, as they announce a television deal this week. We'll talk to Jesse about the particulars of that television deal. But of course, I am brought to you by Fight TV. Fight is a go-to app for MMA fans and practitioners. Live pay-per-views, TV tapings, full-length matches, interviews, movies, and documentaries. The Fight app is your wrestling, MMA, and boxing TV. Watch live pay-per-views and free programming on your own schedule. Download Fight free today by going to Fight, FITE.TV. /radioinfluence/ Once again, that is Fight, FITE.TV /radioinfluence/. And of course, Fight always has a ton of MMA available there, whether it is free or behind a paywall. Some of the free MMA that you can watch on Fight TV this week: Tachi Palace 32 on Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. On Saturday, you can watch ACB 66 Young Guns 20. That starts at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Also, they have some MMA that is behind a paywall that you can check out this weekend. On Saturday, you have ECF 15. That is for $14.99. Also, you have CFL 11 for $9.99. The ECF 15 card is at 6 p.m. on Saturday, and the CFL 11 card is at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And also, you get the Road FC 41 coming up there on August the 12th at 3 a.m. So a ton of MMA action to take in there over at Fight TV. And by going to that web address I mentioned, Fight, FITE.TV /radioinfluence/, that is the way Fight knows that you heard about them here on the MMA Report podcast. So hopefully you are having a great week. It's been a great week for me, a very busy week for me, honestly, as football season is here for me. And if you're not aware, along with, you know, covering MMA and being part of the management and ownership team of RadioInfluence.com, I also work for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Radio Network. So I've been getting ready for our first game, which is next week, next Friday night in Cincinnati. Looking forward to hopping on a plane next week, heading up to Cincinnati, and for first NFL game of the season for me. And got a buddy, John, who lives up there. So looking forward to hanging out with him, having some lunch up there with him. And football season is here. You know, it's always it's kind of crazy. I've been involved in NFL football since 2004, and man, it's 2017. What a, you know, it's just time has flown by. So really looking forward to the football season. But of course, I am here to talk about what is going on in MMA, and the fourth episode of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series did take place on Tuesday of this week, and two fighters from this fight card did receive a UFC contract, and that was Julian Marquez, who got a head kick knockout against Phil Hawes, and the other one was Brandon Davis, who got a unanimous decision win over Austin Arnett. Also on this fight card, you had Kyler Phillips with a TKO win over James Gray. Carlos Candelario gets a unanimous decision win over Ronaldinho Candido. And John Castaneda, who was on this podcast last week, he got a unanimous decision win over Shaden Lihoa. So, in terms of kind of things that stuck out to me about this fight card, first off, what a knockout by Julian Marquez. I thought Phil Hawes got off to a good start, but, when you think of Phil Hawes, when he came into MMA with his wrestling pedigree, look, the sky was the limit for him. I mean, everyone was looking at Phil as potentially, maybe the next great, prospect in MMA, but just things have not worked out for him. He's now lost back-to-back fights, and if you count that exhibition fight that he had on the Ultimate Fighter 23 against Andrew Sanchez, he has now lost 3 of 4. His last win came at WSOF 31 against Josh Key. That was back in June of last year. After that, he was submitted by Lewis Taylor at WSOF 34, was supposed to then fight at WSOF 35. That never happened, and now he's got here. So it's obviously go back to the drawing board, and unfortunately for Phil Hawes, that is going to be a highlight that is going to get played over and over again. But no shocker that Dana White picked Julian Marquez. And if you don't have Fight Pass and you did not see the entire fight, just go to the UFC Fight Pass Twitter account and you can see the reaction of Dana White, Sean Shelby, and Mick Maynard. That was the reaction. They said, yep, he is getting in to the UFC. In the co-main event, you had Kyler Phillips, who we had on this podcast last week, as he got a win over James Gray. That happened there in the first round. James Gray, looked like he protested the stoppage for a little bit. I think actually you could have made the case that maybe the referee could have come in sooner than he did. But nice win there by Kyler Phillips, a guy that's now 5-0, and he's only 22 years old. And one of the things about these contracts that the fighters do sign when they compete on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, they are only one-fight deals, but there is a 30-day clause in that contract that allows the UFC to sign them. So basically you kind of look at that and say they've got essentially 30 days to decide whether they want to bring in, whether Kyler Phillips gets a UFC contract now or down the road. This guy clearly is going to be in the UFC. You saw the talent that he had there with him. Carlos Candelario, decision win over Ronaldo Candido. And Candelario, this was a pretty a nice performance. He found himself in some tough positions. For Candido, look, you just saw it. I think you would say a very one-dimensional fighter. Obviously, tremendous jiu-jitsu skills, but he's got to round out his game because he just really couldn't do much on the feet. He had to get the fight to the ground. And you got to give Carlos Candelario a lot of credit for what he was able to do to get out of some of those tight submission attempts. There was times that you just thought the end was going to come, but Carlos Candelario gets a win. And clearly, another guy on the UFC radar. Maybe he gets another win or two in CES, probably ends up getting into the UFC, but definitely an exciting guy to see there. Brandon Davis, I mentioned, got into the UFC, unanimous decision win over Austin Arnett, survived a choke attempt in the second round. Just a great fight between both these guys, a stand-up brawl. They land combined over 200 strikes in 3 rounds of fighting. Brandon Davis lands 119 strikes. Austin Arnett lands 91 strikes. Great fight. Brandon Davis clearly, well deserving of getting that UFC offer. And then John Castaneda, I thought, picked him, got him in there. Of course, he was on this podcast last week. Thought he won the fight against Shaden, outlanding him 61-32. Both of them had two takedown attempts. John Castaneda, 2 of 7. Shaden was 2 of 6. And, John Castaneda, a guy that, has been on a roll. We had him on the podcast last week, and now outside of Combates America. And I think another guy that clearly on the UFC radar, and who knows, we have seen some guys get brought back into this contender series, which, by the way, is going to run until the end of August. And, I think I like the contender series more than I do the Ultimate Fighter. But as I have said on this podcast, the Ultimate Fighter is not going away. It's just not going to go away. I know there's people who would love to see the Ultimate Fighter go away, but that is just not going to happen. But overall, on Tuesday night, a very good night of fights on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. And I'm really loving these Tuesday Night Contender Series shows that they're doing. I will tell you, I have found myself, with the exception, 3 out of the 4 weeks, it was the second week was the only week I did not watch the Snoopcast. Personally, I like the Snoopcast. I just think it's funny. It's entertaining. And as I say, at the end of the day, this is entertainment, which, by the way, it's just happened to be a great segue into something I wanted to talk about. And of course, I talked about this on the post-fight podcast, myself and Daniel Galvan, about Tyron Woodley. Of course, if you did not hear, Tyron Woodley was on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani on Monday, revealed potentially looking at a torn labrum. So send the healing vibes out to Tyron Woodley. And, you know, and he wants a public apology from Dana White. I think that is highly unlikely that is going to happen. Tyron Woodley had mentioned the fact that he did not get that public apology, that Woodley would leak some personal details about White if he did not get that apology. But Colby Covington, who trains at American Top Team, of course, Tyron Woodley does do some training down at American Top Team in Coconut Creek, Florida, did send out this tweet where he says, "Don't worry, boss, at Dana White. I know some serious dirt on T. Woodley that would ruin his life. Hashtag fake." Now, you know, look, I think one of the things that I think most people know, there's been some a lot of turnover at American Top Team. Some fighters have left, some coaches have left. And I just have a feeling that maybe this Woodley situation ultimately is going to get some of those things out there light, that maybe the drama of American Top Team, you know, with you know, obviously Robbie Lawler's kind of at the forefront of that, maybe some of that starts maybe to come out in public light. Because I will say this, no one's talking on the record about what's going on down there, so maybe this is what's going to bring that out. You know, of course, everything about Tyron Woodley is still a major talking point in MMA, and as I said on the post-fight podcast, I see both sides of the story. I see where Tyron Woodley's coming from. You know, it is not Tyron Woodley's job to go out there and try to just have complete chaos. Now, knowing the fact of potentially having a torn labrum, it makes a lot of sense to see how that fight ultimately did play out the way it did play out. But I also see it from the UFC's perspective. And I think one of the things when I... As a reporter, and I've said this countless times, I think it's always great for us to go out and watch the fight at a sports bar, because or a restaurant, or you know, a place where a lot of people are watching a pay-per-view fight. Because to me, it really opens up my eyes. You know, I think when I think about maybe one of my regrets in covering this sport is I wish earlier on in my MMA career as a reporter that I would gone out more to sports bars and restaurants that were showing UFC pay-per-views to hear what fans were saying. And I can tell you, one of my biggest takeaways on Saturday night watching UFC 214 during the Woodley and Maya fight, I remember in the fourth round, and me and my buddies, we were sitting at the bar, and I looked around, and hardly anyone was watching the fights. And to me, you know, look, that's just not a good sign. That it's never a good sign when you see something like that. And, you know, so I see where the UFC is coming from, where they're sitting there going, how do we sell Tyron Woodley? You know, I think Tyron Woodley made some great points on Ariel Helwani's show. It's like, hey, you got to promote me. And, but I think that you could, there's, you know, for a majority of the roster, I think you could say the UFC doesn't promote their fighters effectively. So I hope this brings out some change that, you know, and Woodley made some great points. But as I said on the post-fight show, I also see where the UFC is coming from, because, you know, it's kind of like the Snoop broadcast. You know, it's entertainment. I'm entertained by that. Tyron Woodley is a great fighter. I like watching Tyron Woodley fight. But, you know, a performance like Saturday night, and you go back to that performance at UFC 209, that's going to turn off fans. And so it's going to be interesting to kind of see how the UFC, you know, what goes on here. I think it's highly unlikely that Tyron Woodley is going to get his public apology from Dana White, but it's going to be an interesting thing to see how this does play out, you know. And, you know, and look, Tyron Woodley, the guy's an incredible fighter. I think he's likely one title defense away from, you know, being considered potentially the greatest 170-pound fighter in UFC history. You may think it's crazy, but, I mean, look at the run this guy has been on, you know. I mean, yes, I have no problems if you criticize Tyron Woodley for the performance he had on Saturday night. But let's not forget, it was a year ago that this guy just steamrolled through Robbie Lawler, you know. But, I mean, look, we are a sporting society that we remember the last thing we saw. And so, as I, you know, and I've said this a couple times here, and I said it on the Post Fight Podcast, I see it from both sides. I see it from the Tyron Woodley side, and I see it from the UFC side. And I think it's, you know, I think what needs to happen is that Dana Woodley and Woodley's management, first round management, has to get in front of a table together and just have a conversation, you know, about this entire situation. But you know, I think that, you know, I would hope that Woodley's management could, I hope they kind of see it the way I do, where I can sit there and say I see both sides of the story. I see where Woodley is coming from, but I also do see where the UFC is coming from. So that is still a big story in MMA. In terms of some other stories that are going on, you might have seen this on MMAfighting.com, where following UFC 214 on Saturday, the California State Athletic Commission said that Drew Dober, who had that knockout win against Josh Berkman, must move up after coming in more than 18% above his weight class at UFC 214, and this comes from MMA Fighting and Mark Raimondi, who obtained the medical suspension sheets from the California State Athletic Commission. Per the sheet, Dober came in more than 18% above the 155-pound weight division on fight day weigh-in check. The new rules with the California State Athletic Commission say that any athlete who is more than 10% above the weight class should be recommended to move up. The fighter must be cleared by a physician or must move up in weight due to his weight being greater than 18%. That is what the document said. Said the fighter needs to be in a heavier weight class per medical evaluations. Now, this article does state that if Dober was more than 18% above his weight, that means he walked into the octagon at around 183 pounds. Of course, that is 28 pounds above 155 pounds. Dober said he was contacted by the California State Athletic Commission on Monday and told him the news, but he's not ready to sit there and go up to 170 pounds. Of course, you may have seen last week, I put a tweet out there, the Association of Boxing Commissions and Combative Sports did approve new weight classes. And basically the way when it comes to, you know, it's 105 all the way up to 205, a 10 pound weight difference between each division. So 105, 115, 125, 135, 145, 155, 165, 175, 185, 195, 205. Also, they added a 225 pound weight class. And, you know, one of the things is, and when you hear my interview with Jesse Finney later on this podcast, I actually asked him that question because about the new weight class and his thoughts on, of course, being a promoter and a former fighter. And I know a lot of people are down on the 225-pound weight class, but I think what you're going to see, I think you're going to see a lot of regional promotions are really going to jump all in on some of these new weight divisions. I like the new weight divisions. I think that ultimately, at the end of the day, this is a move that's being put in for safety reasons. I think it's also a way to try to limit, you know, these bad weight cuts that we do see happen. I mean, just on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series show, Julian Marquez talked about how tough of a weight cut he had and how tough it was to get that final pound off. So I really do like some of these weight classes that they are putting in there. And, you know, my understanding is the UFC is on board. I know Dana White came out and wasn't necessarily all in, I guess all in would probably be the way to say it. But my understanding is that the UFC is for these new weight classes. We'll see ultimately if they put them in. I think if you are Bellator, you should put them in. And it's going to be interesting to kind of see how this ultimately does play out. Two other news items I want to mention before we get into the interview portion of this week's podcast. You may have seen this on social media. Duke Rufus put up a picture about upcoming Duke Rufus Sport fighters that are going to have fights. One of the names that was up there was CM Punk, and it said TBD. First off, I'm not surprised that CM Punk may be having another fight, but to me, the Mike Jackson fight is a fight to make. I mean, I've said this for months. I think that's a fight they should make, but ultimately we'll see if ultimately that does happen. One last note I want to mention, television ratings for MMA have come out. Some of those announcements to mention. First up, the Bellator replay of their pay-per-view on Friday night, 559,000 viewers. I thought overall, not a bad number for a tape delay show, but you know, I think one of the questions I would have about, I don't understand why they chose that date of July 28th. Why not do it like the week before Bellator 182? To me, that would have made a lot of sense, but you know, we'll see. But I think for a replay, 559,000 on Friday night, I think that's not a bad number there for Bellator. On Saturday, of course, we had UFC 214. The prelims on FXX averaged 886,000 viewers, and it peaked at 1.072 million viewers in the 9:15 to 9:30 quarter hour. The pre-show on FXX averaged 307,000 viewers, and the post-fight show had 267,000 viewers. Also, a little note on the weigh-in broadcast, which was on Friday night, 8 p.m. on FS1. It came in with 245,000 viewers. That is the fifth most watched live weigh-in on FS1. That weigh-in was also replayed later that night at 10 p.m. Eastern time. It came in with 142,000 viewers. And also on Saturday night, you had PFL2, and that averaged 153,000 viewers. And I will tell you, I did not see the PFL card drawing that amount of viewers. I thought I really thought it was going to be like under 125. So a little bit of kudos there to the PFL for being able to draw that many viewers there on Saturday night there on NBCSN. As I'm recording this podcast, I still have the PFL on my DVR. Started watching it a little bit the other day, then got stuck in some work stuff. But definitely going to try to check out those fights. Andre Harrison remained undefeated. And, you know, I saw Flow Combat. They did a prospect piece, and they still had Andre Harrison in it. But has the point come that we need to stop calling Andre Harrison a prospect? I think that time's got to come. And what, the guy's what, 17-18-0 now? To me, that time has come that we need to stop. We need to take the prospect label off Andre Harrison's name. And that does it for the news and notes going on in the world of MMA. So the time has come to get into the interview portion of this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast. The first two interviews you're going to hear are with fighters that will be a part of next Tuesday's Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. First up, you're going to hear from Everett Sims. Everett's a heavyweight out of American Top Team. Had a chance to catch up with him late last week, and I started off my conversation with Everett by relaying something that his manager had told me about how Everett is trying to bring the sexy back to the heavyweight division.
Easy. Bring the attention back to the heavyweight division. Everybody's caught up in the, you know, flyweights and 55ers. I mean, the only way to get that crown is to be a heavyweight.
And of course, you recently changed the nickname from Wolverine to Sexual Chocolate, which, by the way, I saw the logo you guys came up with. Tremendous logo, first off. But what ultimately brought on the now of course, nicknames. You can't give yourself your own nickname, so did somebody give you the nickname?
Yeah, it was a couple of times I actually been in the fight and hear someone yell it out, like in the crowd. So it's some of my friends and stuff heard it, so we just ran with it.
And of course, everything has been tremendous for you here, 4-0 in your career. Now you got this fight against Shelton Graves. You do a lot of training with Alexio Linick, which we all have seen his success in the UFC. First off, talk about his submission game and how that. How tough that is for you just being his training partner, because he goes for some weird submissions.
He has one of the most creative submission minds I've ever seen, like, ever. I definitely picked up some new tricks, so I can't reveal them right now, but you might have to see them.
Yeah, you know, because you're always trying to keep the, you know, your tricks very secretive. I mean, in terms of, you know, the tool set, how much of your tool set have you shown? If you put it on a scale of 1 to 10, do you think that you really, you've only shown about maybe 20% of your skill set inside your fights?
Probably not even that, because none of my fights make it past the first round, let alone the last couple minutes. So I try my best, but hey, if they go down, I don't get paid by the hour, I get paid by the job, so.
Is there any part of you that wants to have that 15-minute war, or you're like, nah, I'm good. I'll get out of there in 2 minutes, and I'm good.
If I can get out there in 2 seconds, my paycheck will probably increase better. So I do what I got to do to get in and get out. So there's no damage. You got to stay pretty, man. got to stay marketable. Got to keep heavyweight sexy.
In terms of Shelton Graves, what's your thoughts on him as an opponent? And do you view this as the toughest challenge of your career?
Obviously, the next fight is always the toughest challenge. You know, I'm always trying to protect that O, and I will protect that O at all costs. He's solid. He's looking to, you know, kind of grind you out and stuff like that. But, I mean, like I said, I've been training with Alexi, so I got some few tricks up my sleeve, too. So I'm not worried. Where the fight goes, I'll finish him.
Obviously, this is the biggest opportunity of your career, and this will, for a lot of people who are going to be tuning in on Fight Pass, it's going to be the first time they've ever seen you compete. What would you want those fans to know about you as a fighter?
I'm highly aggressive, highly explosive. Don't blink or you will miss it. I'll always finish the fight.
Is, you know, highly aggressive, obviously that's the type of fighters that, you know, not just Dana White, all promoters are looking for, but how do you balance that line of, you know, being an aggressive fighter, but, you know, not kind of overstepping it and maybe putting yourself in a bad position?
I've learned that actually from training at American Top Team. They kind of, you know, slowed me down, made me a little more patient, but I always have that killer instinct in me. If I see it opening, I would do my best to try and finish the fight.
Is patience the hardest trait to acquire in the sport?
Yes, by far.
What's the second hardest?
Diet.
so how much weight do you got to cut to make the 265 limit?
Oh, I don't have to cut anymore now. So I've cleaned up my diet. I got way too big, but you know, they got to bring the attention back to the heavyweight division. So I got to get my sex appeal back, stay lean, stay explosive, stay beautiful.
In terms of cleaning up that diet, was it? Are you eating some foods now that you know, if you would have asked you 2 years ago, you would have never even considered eating?
No, I just actually went back to my diet like 2 years ago instead of me just, I'm good. I can eat that, you know, more portion control. So,
now I did hear the story about going out for dinner late night with your manager. And you guys had to dodge some bullets.
Yes, that's probably the greatest memory I probably will ever have from here on out with my manager. I just fought Frank Tate. I think after that, you know, came back. I went to work, and you know, I was getting back late. I called him up. Hey man, you want to go get some food? He's like, sure, because he was staying at my place, and I live literally not even like a half a mile from IHOP. So went there. Actually, I met him there. I went home, showered, went there, and ate him. We had a good conversation. And as we're leaving, we notice like a group of people like just start like running out of like a nightclub or something like that. It was like a nightclub. And, you know, my manager was like, huh, I wonder what's going on over there. See, me being who I am, kind of street smart, I'm like, that's not a good idea. Go now. He's like, let's go look. I'm like, why would you want to go? Look, wait, there are people running out. Why do you want to go towards danger? It doesn't make any sense. So I'm looking at him, calling him like, you're being retarded. Like, we need to go. It was already too late. About 7-8 gunshots ran out. You got people running everywhere. You know, say him and I, we just, you know, located the people, just dug down, make sure we didn't get by the stray bullet. But it was actually pretty, we were pretty calm and kind of comical, cracking jokes the whole time.
Yeah, I remember seeing his Facebook post about the next day. I call him up and say, hey, man, you good? You all right?
He's like, that's what we get for eating IHOP late at night. That's supposed to show you're not supposed to be doing that.
You mentioned, what is a daytime job for you?
I do security work at a condo. So I actually get to carry a gun. And, of course, I went home and I left my gun at home. I was like, I'm going right down the street. No need. See, it goes to show you, it's better to, you know, have it and not need it, you know, and need it and not have it.
So having a job, but also, you know, getting the training in for a fight, how do you balance that schedule of making sure, obviously, you're paying the bills, but also, you know, getting the work you need in for your fights?
It's still a grind. Like I said, I still have to have a, you know, day job, pay the bills and stuff, but it also keeps me focused. Because I know this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, and I don't want to, you know, work in a day job and train in full time and still, you know, still have a girlfriend. I still want to have a regular life. It's rough. So it does keep me focused in training. So I go in there, I don't play any games. I'm going to grind these couple hours out and go to work and be good.
So what does your family think about you being a fighter?
Now they're pretty supportive. Of course, you know, no mother wants to, you know, hear the sin, wants to get into a random fight for no reason. That's just, you know, parents. But, you know, she's been real supportive. She's been to actually just about majority of all my professional fights.
Is she
my grandmother, which is a big shocker. I didn't think, you know, the grandma would actually go for that. But yeah, she's usually the first one down to travel.
Now, are they coming out to Vegas to watch you fight?
I believe so. So still don't know yet, but whether they are or not, you know, job stays the same and I do what I do best and that's win.
And, I guess one of the interesting parts about this contender series is having your fight called by Snoop Dogg. you know, obviously I think no fighter ever thought your fight commentary would be by Snoop Dogg, but, is it just one of those things like, man, I just want to go out and knock this dude out so Snoop has some memorable thing to say and it becomes a viral sensation?
Exactly. You know, maybe, you know, meet up with him, party with him, you know, get an autograph. Who doesn't like Snoop?
And, of course, this fight is coming up here on August the 8th, Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. I guess the prediction would be first round stoppage. You're going to continue the streak?
Oh, of course. Keep the streak alive. Don't blink or you miss it.
And where can everyone follow you at on social media?
You can find me at Twitter, Instagram, Sims Chocolate. S-I-M Chocolate, all one word. You'll find it.
Great stuff there from Everett Sims. Really looking forward to watching this fight next Tuesday night as he'll be a part of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series as he is going to be taking on Shelton Graves. But coming up next, you're going to hear from another man that's going to be a part of next Tuesday's Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, and that is Ricky Simon. Of course, Ricky has been on UFC Fight Pass in the past. Maybe you know, maybe you don't know. Since losing to Anderson Dos Santos in Titan, he's won back-to-back fights. And I start off my conversation with Ricky, where I just simply ask him what has been going on in his career since that loss to Anderson Dos Santos.
You know, I basically was in limbo for about a year. Couldn't get anyone to fight me, so I was in training camp ready to go. Had a bunch of fights fall out. Tried to jump on a bunch of short notice fights that didn't end up working out either. So finally I went up to 145 and was able to find a couple people to fight me, and you know, got two quick wins, and you know, now I'm ready to get back down to my actual weight class and getting, you know, this at this bigger stage and get a win and hopefully get that contract.
Why do you think that no one wanted to fight you?
I don't know if it was just no one wanted to fight me or things weren't, you know, coming together or what, but you know, I feel like, you know, I'm a dangerous fight. And then, you know, especially coming off a loss, you know, you usually see people who, if they, you know, coming off a loss, who have that fire burning again and come back with a vengeance. So maybe people didn't want to be that comeback fight. So I don't know. It could be for multiple different reasons, but it wasn't happening and it was driving me crazy.
I think heading into that Titan fight there for the title, there was, a lot of expectations on yourself. Did you feel any of those expectations that people were putting on you? Because I think a lot of people kind of felt like, hey, he's going to go out there, he's going to win the title, and then all of a sudden he's going to be in the UFC. I mean, did you feel any pressure from that matchup?
I mean, there's always pressure. I mean, whether it be from, like, my family, my friends, or my team. I mean, there's always going to be, like, that external pressure, but, I mean, I honestly never felt better going into a fight. I never felt better in a fight. I felt great. And, you know, that's what I love about MMA is anyone can get caught at any point, no matter how the fight's going. And I was dominating the fight, and I got caught. And, you know, that was my first loss ever. And, you know, I knew it could happen. I wasn't under any false illusions that it couldn't. So, but no, I mean, It wasn't anything with the pressure. I felt great. I was performing well. Just got caught, and you know, it happens.
Did you immediately move on from that fight, or did it take some time?
It took some time. I was excited. I was, you know, thinking, you know, I'm going to win this belt, maybe get signed to a UFC contract. I was, you know, headlining a card on UFC Fight Pass with some big names underneath me, and you know, it took me a little bit of time to move on, but, you know, I was right back in the gym and training, you know, and it didn't stop me. It's not like I, like, sat in bed and cried for weeks at a time. You know, I was right back in the gym, but it definitely bugged me. It left a bad taste in my mouth, and then not being able to fight for a year. You're only as good as your last fight, and I had to sit on that fight for a year. So that was killing me, but, you know, I've definitely moved on now. I mean, I've 2 wins under my belt since, and you know, I'm about to get the third win here coming up.
Obviously a huge opportunity here. Before we talk about this fight, I gotta ask you about going over to Russia and being with Tyson Nam. Obviously Tyson, you know, once again shocking the MMA world. He seems to be pretty good in these situations. But for you going over to Russia, what was that experience like?
Oh man, that was it was a crazy experience. I feel like that's like a once in a lifetime opportunity, and Tyson did it twice, you know? So it was crazy that I got to be a part of that. He actually, he was one of my main training partners, you know, since I turned pro. Then he recently moved back to Hawaii, and, he got the call that he was fighting Ali. So he flew me out, and I was training with him for a few weeks. And then I went with him to Russia and, watched him get that huge upset knockout win, and it was surreal, man. It was awesome. It was just it was a perfect trip.
You know, I guess do you all see the fight game differently when you're in the corner as opposed to being the fighter? I mean, do you take anything from that to make yourself a better fighter?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that goes along with you know, coaching in general. When you coach something, you know, you're able to kind of step back and look at it and, like, not, I don't know, like, be in the moment, but also, like, it's just easier to, like, as a coach, be like, oh man, just do this, do that, you know. But when you're in there as a fighter, it's not as easy. So it definitely helps, though. It helps me take a step back and think about when I'm in there, and, you know, it actually helps me relax a little bit. So, I mean, especially in that big of a stage, you know, in front of a crowd like that. You know, so yeah, I mean, it's definitely beneficial to be in the corner there and not be in there inside the cage, actually in there and take a step back, and yeah, it definitely helps.
I've had an opportunity to talk to several fighters who have either fought on the contender series or are going to fight on the contender series. When your manager first calls you up and tells you about this opportunity, did you're like, contender series? What are you talking about?
I think, I didn't know too much about it yet, but I mean, like, I knew enough. I knew enough, and I knew that, you know, if it wasn't going to be like a short notice call to fill in a UFC card or something like that, I mean, this is the next best thing. Where, you know, I've been asking for a shot, and if this is what I need to do to prove it, then I'm more than happy to do that.
I think one of the terms that some guys will use is that this is essentially a job interview. I mean, do you in a way look at that? I mean, it's like, hey, you know, I mean, how many times do you have a chance to sit there and fight in front of Dana White, Mick Maynard, and Sean Shelby?
Yeah, no, it's that's a perfect way to look at it. I mean, I feel like I bug these guys enough on Instagram and Twitter tagging them. So, you know, it's like you ask for it, here you go. So they give me an explosive opponent, and I feel like I match up well, and I feel like it's going to be a great fight. And yeah, I'm going out there to get that contract.
I will say this: one of the things I have seen, don't tag Mick Maynard on Facebook. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't like when fighters tag him on Facebook who are trying to get into the UFC. For any fighters who may be watching this, tag him on Twitter. He doesn't do that on Facebook because I mean, look, they know who they ultimately want to sign here. But it is a unique scenario where, you know, it's a very small environment in a gym situation. Yes, there's going to be people there, but you know, very much unlike anything else you've been a part of. What would you say is, I gotta guess the pros of that is you know you're gonna be able to hear your coaches. Is there any cons to essentially having a gym fight?
I mean, not really. Doesn't bug me any. It might have like a sparring like feel to it, but I mean, we're still gonna be on UFC Fight Pass with plenty of people watching. So I mean, I feel like it's ideal, really. I mean, mm-hmm. I get to go in there, I get to hear my coaches, I get to just go out there and perform, and then, but still, there's gonna be a bunch of people watching. I get to make an impact and put my name out there. So I mean, it's an ideal situation for me. I'm in front of the bosses, and I'm going there and get the job done.
And one of the things I think a lot of the guys that have fighting on the later episodes, I believe they have advantage because now you know what Dana White, Sean Shelby, and Mick Maynard are looking for. We've seen on the previous episodes, it's the guys who go out there and put on an exciting matchup. I mean, do you kind of feel the same way that it really is an advantage for yourself that you know what you got to do to get signed?
Yeah, definitely it is. When I first heard about it, I wasn't too sure what to expect. So, but now we've heard what they're looking for. We know what they want. So, I mean, as far as you know, they're not wanting you to go out there and, you know, just try to hug someone and hold them down and, you know, just get the win. I mean, you know, I don't think I'm going to have that problem. I'm an exciting fighter by nature. And, I think it's an ideal situation. I get to go out there in front of the bosses and do what I do.
And the opponent, Donovan Frilo, fans will remember him from his time in the World Series of Fighting, fought for a title there. You know, as you have prepared for Donovan, what when you think about his name or you know, you watch his previous fights, what comes to his mind? I mean, is there something about that he does that you just say, I have to be on the lookout for this?
Oh yeah, there's a few things. I mean, he's an explosive fighter. He wings shots. So, you know, he's looking to throw overhands. So he just can't get lazy, you know, just on the feet with, you know, throwing out nothing punches. And especially, you know, as a wrestler, I have an explosive shot. He waits for that, and he has plenty of finishes by that guillotine choke, and he gets in that position a lot. So even in that title world, that WSOF title fight, he got his opponent in that position a lot. It looked deep, too. I was surprised that his opponent was able to fight out. So there are plenty of things that I need to look out for, and he's definitely a dangerous opponent, but I still feel like from a technical standpoint, I'm better in every area.
They always, the proper cliche we always hear, this is a great stylistic matchup for yourself. Why would you say this is a great stylistic matchup? Just because, is it just simply put, hey, I'm better everywhere than he is?
I feel like it's like stylistically it's great because he's small for the weight class, I feel. And I feel like I feel good. I feel powerful for 135. And yes, I feel like I have the upper hand in just about every aspect. I mean, obviously, like I said just a little bit ago, anything can happen in an MMA fight. That's why I love it. But I'm feeling comfortable, and I definitely feel ready and prepared for this fight.
One of the questions I always love to ask fighters is, what would you want fans to know about you? You know, I mean, obviously they can go back and they can watch all of your fights, but is there something about you you would want fans to know?
That's a tough question. I mean, All I really do right now is fight. So I mean, whether they want to tune in and watch me scratch, I just want them to know that every time I go out there, I look to push the pace and I look to be explosive. I mean, besides that, I mean, there's another. I mean, from a fan standpoint, I'm kind of just like a nerd. I just play video games and go on hikes and I'm kind of a recluse. So I mean, I'm not that exciting, but unless I get in the cage, then that's where I come to life.
Is video games and being outdoors kind of the thing that just gets your mind off the fight game? That you guys always talk about, you need something to get your mind off the fight game. Is that what it is for you?
Yeah, I mean, well, mostly it's I like to do like active recovery days. So I like to go out and, you know, be active, and but also sometimes it's just dead. And I have four brothers and they're all nerds and they all play video games nonstop. So if I want to hang out with them, I have to play video games. So that's just that's my way to hang out with my brothers, I guess. So and it works out. I'm dead in between workouts or after a workout at night. So I just get to jump on and play. So.
So are you, where are you in the line of brothers? Are you the oldest? You the youngest? You in between?
I'm the second oldest. So I have an older brother and then three younger brothers, and I feel like we're all basically the same, grew up as wrestlers, and I feel like we're all like the same, except they're all just like cooler versions of me. Like they just all have better personalities. And
are you the only fighter?
Yeah, as of right now, I do have a 20-year-old brother who is a little beast, and he's starting to get into training, and yeah, I mean, let's see if he decides to do that.
Final thing, you know, one of the things I like to say is perceptions are not always realities. Is there any perceptions out there of you that is not realities in terms of your abilities?
I came out with my first four fights and had some quick knockouts. And I didn't really get to showcase I grew up as a wrestler. I wrestled my entire life. And I feel like wrestling and grappling is my strong point. And then even I think after those knockouts, I kind of fell in love with, you know, hitting people. So yeah, I mean, people might view me as for a little bit there as a striker or maybe even a brawler or something. But, you know, the reality is I'm a wrestler and I can do it all. And if I want to take you down and submit you, I'm going to do that too.
And, of course, we're all going to be able to see your fight here August 8th, Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series as you take on Donovan Freelo. Ricky, I appreciate time. Let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, on Facebook, my fan page is just Ricky Simone, and Instagram and Twitter is Ricky Simone 135.
And I appreciate Ricky Simone coming on the podcast, talk about his fight coming up next Tuesday night at Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. But right now, we are going to turn our attention over to CFFC. They've got a fight card coming up on Saturday night, CFFC 66. And our next man is stepping up on relative short notice to take on Sean Teed. That is Josh Marsh. Josh is 2-2 in his career. Both of his wins have come at heavyweight. And start up my conversation by relaying, you know, something that was said to me from his management, that the fact that when he was fighting at 205, he had to cut so much weight that it just took so much out of him.
Yeah, man, it was ridiculous. I thought, you know, I mean, since I fought as an amateur at 205 and I spent like the majority of my time in college cutting weight, I could do it as a pro, you know what I mean, cutting weight. Wrestling every Saturday, you know what I mean, cutting weight all week. So I figured I could do it fighting only once every 2 months. But, you know, it was a rude awakening. It was a bad deal.
And, of course, everything's going great since moving up to heavyweight. A very accomplished wrestler, four-time All-American, two times at JUCO, two times at NAIA. You are NAIA national champion. So was it one of those things that once you got through college that you just realized that MMA was the logical transition for you for what was next?
You know, I actually I was wrestling a little bit after my college. I went to the U.S. Open, went to a couple of freestyle tournaments, and worked my way. And then I guess after that, one of my teammates was like, "Hey, why don't you try this MMA?" And I was like, "All right, man, I'll try it." You know what I mean? Did a couple of amateur fights, and then Rick hit me up. he's like, hey man, if you really want to take this serious, just let me know. And I was like, all right, yeah, it seems like a path that I want to go to. I mean, it's kind of hard to really like go pro as a wrestler, you know, trying to make the Olympics. So, you know, it's the next best thing. I love the competition. So.
So what led you to Long Island MMA as why they were the right team for you?
Well, my club coach, Ryan Patrovich, I saw that he was training there. He was he fought for CFFC too. He was about 3-0 at the time, and I was like, you know, I mean, he's been a guy who's pretty much trained me like through high school and stuff. So I was like, all right, I'll try it. And then when I got there, I realized that he actually retired. But I was actually thinking, I was like, maybe I should try another gym. But no, the guys there, they were all great. You know, that's what really kept me there. You know, Ryan LaFleur, he's a great coach. Brian Michelino, Greg DiPasquale, all those guys, man, it's a great atmosphere.
So were they the ones that gave you the nickname, the Shrugmaster?
No, my high school coach, Casey Beach, he's the one who gave me the Shrugmaster nickname. It was more, it was kind of self-proclaimed. It was more of a, he taught me the move, and I was just hitting it on everybody. And he was like, are you starting to master the shrug? And I was like, yeah, call me the Shrugmaster. And it kind of just stuck with me.
So you like the nickname. You know, sometimes guys will say, I'm not a big fan of this nickname. But for you, you like it, right?
Oh, I love my nickname, man. It sticks with me. Every time I go in the gym, everybody calls me Shrugs or Shrugmaster. You know what I mean? No one really calls me Josh most of the time.
I saw something on your Twitter profile where you wrote, work hard, believe in yourself, have faith. Is that a quote that you had got from a coach along the lines? Or is that just something that you just saw and that you just liked that quote?
Just something I believe in myself. You know what I mean? You believe in yourself, you have fun. You know what I mean? There's no point of doing something that you don't want to do if you're not going to have fun with it, you know? If you're going to fight MMA, as grueling as a sport it is, if you're not having fun with it, it's like, what's the point, you know? And have faith. You mean you're just going to have faith in yourself, believe in what you're doing, and everything will pan out.
Was there ever a time where you were not having fun being an MMA fighter?
You know, you get those days, you know, especially when I was cutting weight. You know, you're like, man, do I really want to do this anymore? Like, it's taking a toll on my body. Like, it's crazy. But, you know, like, I just love the atmosphere. I love training. I love the competition. I love just going out there. You know what I mean? It's just amazing. It's just a feeling that you really can't explain.
I know you're also one of Curtis Blaydes' his main training partners. I mean, you both are big boys, you know, being there at heavyweight. But what's the biggest thing you have taken from Curtis that you have put into your own game?
He likes to impose his will a lot on his fighters, you know, and that's one thing that that kind of transitions with me. You know, he goes out there, he sticks to his game plan. He never strays away from it. You know, it's the strike, straight to takedowns, ground and pound, and win. He doesn't care how he wins. He doesn't try to be too flashy. He doesn't try to do anything crazy. You know, he wants to do everything by the book, which is, I mean, kind of how I fight too.
And anyone who looks at your record and the strength of your opponents, one thing they'll notice is that you're not looking for the easy fights. Both your last guys were both 3-0. You won the V3 heavyweight title. Is that just kind of just the competitive spirit in you to where it's like, look, I know I can take the easy road and I can pick up wins, but I want to fight the best guys that want to fight me.
Yeah, definitely, man. There's no point of taking the easy road because you're gonna get, what, 4 or 5 easy fights, and then you get to the big show and then you're just shocked, you know? Like, I never fought anybody this good, you know? So then why might as well start now.
And this is a short notice fight, somewhat of a short notice fight. Back CFFC announced it there in July, and Sean was initially supposed to take on Keith Bell. Do you think this is a drastic change in opponents for him, and that Sean basically is kind of the guy that has more work to do because, you know, you're a totally different opponent than Keith?
I think he's a guy who's going to stick to what he knows. You know, he's going to stick to his jiu-jitsu. He's not going to stray away from his strengths, and neither am I. You know, I've had within the last like 3 weeks, I think I've had 3 opponents back out of fights too. So it's like, you know, he's like, they'll accept the fight and they'll look me up and they're like, oh, he's a great wrestler, I'm not going to go against him. So that's which is why, I mean, I respect him. He's like, I don't care. I like fighters like that. I don't care what his strengths are. I'm going to stick to what I know, and I'm going to fight him. So I look for the best guys to fight. My manager knows my abilities. My coaches feel comfortable. So it's all good. You know, I'm ready to go.
Is it frustrating when guys accept a fight with you, then they back out?
Yeah, it is. But more now, like, I guess now that I don't have to, it would suck if I really had to cut weight and then find out that, you know, the guy backed out. But I mean, it happens, you know, it's a business, you know. Maybe not everybody's cut out for it. So if they back out, they back out. I'd rather them back out weeks before than like the day before or even within the week.
I know they always talk about various adversities you go through as a fighter. I have to imagine the adversity of starting 0-2 is one of the biggest things that you've had to overcome. But is there something else that you really look at and you just, you know, as a fighter, like, that was one of the biggest things I had to overcome to become the fighter I am today?
No, man. I never had to overcome anything. You know, it's just, this is something that just comes natural to me. You know, I've always had this competitive spirit. I've always wanted to be the best at what I do. So this is, you know, another stepping stone.
One of the things I always say in life is there's differences between perceptions versus realities. And I think fighters have to deal with this a lot of, the way some people may perceive them and what and how that's not reality. For you, is there any perception you think people have of you that just is not true?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm pretty a straightforward guy. You know what I mean? I don't put on airs. I don't front in front of people. You know, what you see is what you get.
I think one of the popular answers I hear from fighters, they'll say, I just want people to know I'm a friendly guy. I'm not this mean guy that people may think I am.
I guess that's true too, yeah. Because if you see me, you would think, oh man, this guy is probably scary, but I'm like one of the nicest guys you probably ever meet. Outside the cage, I'm not confrontational at all, you know what I mean? I try to stay away from confrontation, but it's like once you get in that cage, like it's a light switch and you're just on it.
I mean, is it easy for you to turn that switch on and off of when you're stepping into a cage and when you're just, you know, like talking right now? I mean, is it all an issue of knowing when to turn that switch on?
No, it's a quick switch. It's like once you walk down that aisle, and as soon as you step in the cage, and as soon as that cage door closed, boom, switch is on. It's go time.
In terms of the fight against Sean, do you see the victory coming a certain way for yourself?
You know, I don't know whether it's knockout, submission, or decision. I just want to get the win. You know, if I get the finish, that would be great. You know, if I get a submission, you know, I believe in my jiu-jitsu. I know he has good jiu-jitsu, so, and my striking is good. I have a great striking coach, so a great team. So however it goes, it goes.
Is there a part of you that wants to beat him in the jiu-jitsu battles? I mean, you know, knowing that you feel that, hey, that's, you know, one of his biggest strengths is the competitor, and you say, I want to beat him in jiu-jitsu.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think because he's real confident in his jiu-jitsu. I don't think he knows how he doesn't know. I'm just a straight wrestler. I'm just gonna take him down and probably be sloppy. But no, I have pretty good jiu-jitsu. So I mean, it's gonna be a battle in there. We'll see what happens.
Maybe is that the perception, is that people think you're just a wrestler and they underestimate what you can do in the other facets of this game?
Yeah, because I haven't yet been tested to showcase any other skills, you know, like these last, even the fights that I lost, my wrestling was a big factor. I took them down, you know what I mean, ground the pound. I never had to do anything else. So no one's ever pushed me to do anything else so far. So, I mean, if he does, that's great.
One of the things I've always wondered when I see a fighter who wears glasses. Now, when you go into, in fight night, are you wearing contacts or what goes on there?
I don't wear contacts. I'm squinting half the time. Even when I'm training, I'm walking around the gym squinting. It was like, can you see, man? I'm like, barely. Like, I can see, but you know, it's definitely hard to see far. But I mean, the only thing I have to see is the opponent in front of me. That's all that matters.
Have you thought about getting LASIK?
I thought about it. It's not really something that I don't know. I mean, want to mess my eyes like that, you know, having the laser in your eye, you know, it's like, I'd rather just wear glasses.
I've thought about that as well, but I'm always like, man, what if something goes wrong?
Exactly. I've never had any surgery before in my life either.
Oh, really? No major injuries?
No major. I mean, I've torn some ligaments here and there mm-hmm. before, but nothing crazy. So,
In terms of life outside of fighting for you, you know, they always talk about the hobbies that guys will have to just get their mind off the fight game. For you, what is that hobby?
I'm real big in music. You know, I listen to a lot of hip hop, jazz, classical music. Kind of keeps me calm, sane, you know, outside of training. That's about it. I don't need that too much to me.
Would there be something on your phone, music wise, that people will be surprised is on your phone?
Probably some oldies, you know, probably listen, probably some jazz. They probably wouldn't, probably like, what is this? You know, like 1960s type music, you know, no one would expect me to have that on my phone.
Do you have a go-to television show?
I'm watching a lot of things right now, you know. I'm watching Power. I'm watching a lot of stuff on Netflix. Ozark was pretty good. It just came out. What else have I been watching? I'm not a, are you a big fan of Game of Thrones?
I have never seen one episode of Game of Thrones.
Neither have I.
We may be one of the few people who've never seen this.
A1's been going crazy about Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones. I tried at least 3 times to get into it, and it just doesn't.
Look, if the show's not on Netflix, there's a good chance I haven't been watched it. I mean, right now I've been binge watching Last Chance U on Netflix. I think I've got about 2 episodes left.
That football TV show.
Yeah, the football reality show. It's, for someone who's involved in football, it's really interesting to me. To kind of see how it goes, and I think anyone who's ever been any type of athletics, you can kind of relate to the coaches in a way, because I think we've all had to deal with various coaching mentalities.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, because I think that, and I'm sure you know this, you know how to get things out of your training partners to get the best out of them, and training partners know how to get the best out of you, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And but you got the fight here coming up, CFFC 66, looking to go to 3-0 at heavyweight as a pro. I really do appreciate time. I did notice that the Twitter handle is still 205. Now, is that for is that for the weight class, or is that like a zip code?
No, that was definitely my weight class. I just haven't changed yet. I need to change it soon.
But let everyone know right now where they can follow you at on social media.
Shrugs205 on Instagram, Shrugs205 on Twitter, Facebook.com/Shrugmaster.
Awesome stuff there from Josh Marsh. I appreciate him coming on the podcast. Talk about his fight coming up on Saturday night at CFFC 66. Definitely a heavyweight that you want to be paying attention to there on the regional scene. But our final interview is next, and it is with Shamrock FC CEO Jesse Finney. On Tuesday of this week, they announced a television deal. So wanted to bring Jesse on to talk about that television deal. And I started my conversation by mentioning a conversation that I had with Jesse a year ago on this podcast, where he had mentioned that, you know, to take a television deal, it had to be the right deal. So I asked Jesse, hey, why was this the right deal for your promotion?
You know what? You're probably right about a year ago. So that's a lot of people have been asking for a long time. And, you know, ultimately, I think I look at everything in 10-year increments, 5 to 10 years, 20 years. And I just don't feel like a couple of the deals that we were offered were, you know, a couple of year, 1 year deal, 2 year deal. And yeah, and the reason why I think this is a good long-term fit for us for where we're at right now is simply just because, you know, really we didn't have to sell our library. We weren't looking at to get a streaming deal with a site that, you know, just to be affiliated and feel that we were bigger than what we are. We know our position. We know we're a AAA organization. We want to be the best AAA organization out there. And, you know, there's options with this. And I feel like the most important thing is to get the brand out there and to get the fighters out there. Right. So, and if we can be seen in 115 million homes, I mean, that's what it's really all about. It's not about just getting a quick buck and getting paid by a network a little bit of money. Or is it going out and buying your way on TV and having to sell commercials? That's not what we're about. And I'm not knocking people that do that either. So keep that in mind. It's just not what we do. But I also look at the longevity of it. You know, we've been here for almost 20 years. So I think slow and steady will win the race, and we're going to keep doing what we're doing.
And you're going to be on over 50 networks, over 150 million homes nationwide. People can go to ShamrockFightingChampionships.com to see some of the networks that you're going to be on: Root Sports, Spectrum Sports, DirecTV, Dish, Comcast, Sportsnet, just to name a few. As I read the press release, I guess one of the questions that immediately came up is, it does appear that these are going to be tape delayed events when they actually air on TV, correct?
Correct. They will be on tape delay. And then all will still, this, that's part of the deal why we wanted to keep this. We kept this relationship is because we're still going to be able to keep our library. We'll still be able to stream our fights directly through our website at ShamrockFC.com live. And then we'll be able to be seen in 115 million homes in over 50 networks in the world. So for us, it just was a no-brainer. You know, you have live content through our website. We own the library. And then you can also be seen on tape delay as well. So, I mean, I really just don't think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I know in just talking to a lot of promoters, and I think when they're kind of making that decision of whether they want to be on TV or not, sometimes they're ultimately worried about it hurting their live gate. Is that all part of, you know, throughout the years as you have done various media deals, does that even come into your mindset of like, hey, is this going to hurt my live gate?
Oh, sure. I mean, like, I think that it's definitely at the very beginning when you think about it. There's no questions about it. But you're also, you know, once again, we're not short-minded thinkers. We're long, you know, we're big picture thinkers. And, you know, you also look at it, well, listen, if we put on a good show and people want to stay home and watch it and stream it live, let's say we get, you know, 400 or 500 buys, you know, 1,000 buys, whatever. That's also, let's say, 10% want to come to your live event because for us, I know we put on an amazing live event. So let's say you get 10%. It's always about not just that quick buck that you're going to make on the ticket sale. It's about the long-term longevity of our brand. And I feel like at the end of the day, the more eyeballs you can get on, and we believe in our brand and our product and our live events, I'm just telling you, are amazing. We crank a ton of atmosphere and bring a ton of energy to the building. So it's one of these situations where I believe that whatever we get out there, we're not going to lose on just the people that are going to stream it and watch it home. Plus, something very interesting for us, and this probably doesn't come into factor to a lot of other promotions, is we're a 21 and over event in St. Louis. Now we're all ages in some other cities, but just in the St. Louis market, we're 21 and over. So a lot of people that are 20 years old do a lot of viewing parties, 18-year-olds, or just families in general. And so you have to be 21 to enter the casino.
Yeah, I know some other promotions have done that as well. Of course, you have been busy, Tom. If I would have told you, you know, let's just say a year ago, that you'd have a YouTube video hit over 1.6 million hits, what would you have said?
I would have been pretty happy, right? I mean, I'd been pretty happy. I think that it's been a great year for us with everything that's going on. I feel like that we're definitely going the right direction. But, you know, to something like the double knockout that we had, it's just, it's been crazy. You know, it's almost weird in a sense, like a lot of our highlights, and we have a top 10 knockouts, and I'll bet you probably three or four of them probably have over 500,000 views. And, you know, I feel like just the power of the internet, and it just can continually get our brand out there and keep pushing things and, you know, and get the fighters to the next level. And it's probably the most important thing that we do.
Of course, it's been a very busy year for you. Of course, you've got your next event coming up here just a couple of weeks, August 25th. What can we expect from that fight card?
You know, that's an interesting fight card. I mean, that's one of the fight cards that's very unique. We do a mix in a ring. We do a boxing, kickboxing, and MMA. And it's an extreme event. We only do four of those a year. So this is one of our, you know, something we're a little newer to, I guess you should say, because we've been into it for probably the last 4 or 5 years. But this is September is when we're really going to kick everything off. Is September 16th and September 22nd and Ameristar Casino on September 16th and then River City Casino on September 22nd. And that is going to be two amazing events. You know, it's Aaron Heifetz fighting Zach Boucher for the 170-pound world title. And Zach is our champion. Zach wins the title. He's got a 5-fight deal in the Bellator. So, I mean, we've got some big things come up here in the fall, and I'm ecstatic about it, truly. Like, this is probably the most momentum we've had going in a very long time, and we continue to just keep pushing forward.
I think a lot of people are probably surprised by Zach getting that win over Bobby. Was that kind of the feeling after that fight that a lot of fans were kind of surprised that Bobby didn't get the victory on that night?
You know, Zach Boucher is probably one of the most improved fighters I've ever seen at this level, where he comes in, he's fighting at a pretty high level, and the guy gets, he's twice the fighter he was a year ago. He continues to, I don't know if he got a slow start in the game or what, but he's one of these guys that, you know, you get to this level and yeah, you're going to continue to get better and you're going to continue to work on your things and slowly but surely, but not Zach. He's one of these guys that he's dominated at the 170 pound division since he went back up. He was with Titan for a while. He had some big wins in Titan and then had some losses in Titan. So he was back and forth and Zach back and forth and became a free agent. And I said, man, this is the type of guy that we really want to get behind and push. And he continues to get better. And it's just so hard to see a guy at this age continue just to get better. And, you know, look, it was a great fight with Bobby. That is going to be one of the first fights we put out there right away now here with the new TV network deal. Mm-hmm. And he is, he won three rounds. Bobby won two. It was just one of those fights. Now, he did dominate the fifth round. There's no question about it. But it was one of those fights that Bobby's so much bigger, so much stronger, so much more experienced. But Zach just fought so smart, so technical, so good. And he looked amazing. So Aaron Heifeld is a young gun coming out here on September 22nd. He's going to have his hands full with Zach. But Aaron is also one of these guys that he's got lead in his hands. So you never can count a guy out like that.
I know it was mentioned in the press release that Shamrock FC 289 and 290 will be the first Shamrock cards that will be put into an hour-long program. Do you know exactly when those actually will debut, where people will be able to see them on TV?
We don't right now, but we're going to know by the end of the week. So we're actually working on that as we speak. And then once we get some further details, we'll push those out.
One of the things, and I want to get your thought process on this, over the last week, the Association of Boxing Commissions and Combative Sports did approve new weight classes. As a guy who's around fighters all the time, promotes fights, what's your thoughts on the addition of 165, elimination of 170, adding 175, 195, and 225? Do you kind of say, hey, this is what's best for a sport, or are you on the other side saying we don't need to be, we don't need all these weight classes?
First and foremost, I'm about the fighter safety, right? So I'm about the fighter safety. And if that's what they feel that we need, I'm all in favor of it. I truly am. But I also don't want to hear fighters out there. And look, I'm a former fighter saying this as well. I don't want to hear these fighters out there complain that they don't get enough fights because they want to stick in their weight class. It's going to be a flexible time for a long time to come. Where, if you're a 165er, you might be fighting 75. If you're a 75, you might squeeze down to 65. And if that's those are the fights that you want, everybody has to be flexible at this point, especially at the AAA level for us, is we have to be flexible as far as guys getting out there. And once they implement this, we're going to go full forward with it as well. So we're going to go 65, 75, the 85s. I think it's great for the sport. I truly do. I think it's for the longevity of the sport. And if you look at it, it's also going to create more champions, which will create more buzz. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to see the negative side that everybody's a champion either.
Mm-hmm. Do you like the cruiserweight division? Because I think that's the one division that people mm-hmm. seem to be like, no, you don't. But I think for a promotion like yourself and other promotions that are in your similar position, I got to think they like that, as essentially another marketing tool.
So absolutely, cruiserweight. You're talking was it 235? Is that what they did?
Yeah, 225.
225. I would say it probably should have been around 235, but I think it's an absolute slam dunk. I truly do, because if you look at these guys, they're just killing themselves at 230 to get down to 205. They're too small at 265. I mean, that's a true tweener with that much weight in between. But I also say absolutely that if there's one weight class, that would be my first and foremost that I would put in, and would probably be the 235, not 225, but I think that is definitely needed.
But of course, you've got your events coming up. ShamrockFightingChampionship.com is where to go. Shamrock_FC on Twitter. Of course, Shamrock Fighting Championships on Facebook as well. Anything else you want to let my listeners know about what's coming up with Shamrock FC?
No, I just think that, first and foremost, we appreciate your support. We appreciate all the fan support. And, look, we've been here almost 20 years, and we're going to continue to be here another 20 years. Just got to keep pushing the envelope, keep getting better. And, look, I love to interact with fans. So if you guys have some things that you'd like to see us improve on, feel free. Shoot us a message and at the website. And we'll continue to do and try to please as many people as we can and continue to get better.
Always love having Jesse Finney on the program and talk about everything going on with Shamrock FC. And very interested to see how that television deal does work out for Shamrock FC. But, you know, look, there's going to be tape delay shows. And Jesse mentioned you still can watch Shamrock events live on their website via internet pay-per-view. So I really appreciate Jesse coming on the podcast. I want to thank Everett Sims, Ricky Simone, Jesse Finney, and Josh Marsh all coming on this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast. But I do want to wrap up this week's episode by talking about some of the MMA that is taking place on this weekend. Of course, coming up on Friday, myself and Daniel Galvan will have a preview podcast for Saturday's UFC Fight Night, which is taking place down in Mexico City. Going to be headlined by a pretty critical matchup and the 125-pound division. You got Sergio Pettis versus Brandon Moreno. Of course, we've all known the run Brandon Moreno has been on since The Ultimate Fighter. The main card will be on FS1 starting at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Prelims on FS1 at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. And the early prelims will be at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You're going to have two fights a part of the prelims. The feature prelim, Joseph Morales making his UFC debut, taking on Roberto Sanchez. Of course, Joseph Morales signed on Dana White's looking for a fight series. Also, you have Alvaro Herrera and Jordan Rinaldi are going to be a part of that preliminary card on UFC Fight Pass. In terms of some of the fights that have my eyes, you know, Dustin Ortiz against Hector Sandoval. We'll see how Dustin Ortiz looks in that one. Bradley Scott, Jack Hermanson, we'll see how that one goes. You know, Alejandro Perez, Andre Sugmuthov. Of course, Andre's a guy we've had on this podcast plenty of times. As I said on the post-fight show, it's still kind of odd to me that Rashad Evans is on this card and is not the co-main event of the fight card. He's actually going to be second fight on the main card. Maybe that says a lot about where Rashad Evans is at this point, taking on Sam Alvey. Also, Alejo Buen, Nico Price. That should be a fun, exciting fight. Your co-main event, Ronda Marcos against Alexa Grasso. They have not given Alexa Grasso an easy time in the UFC, but that is on Saturday night, UFC fight night down in Mexico City. By the way, Todd Grisham and Brian Stann will be calling the fights on FS1. Your studio analyst for FS1 will be Kenny Florian and Eves Edwards. Now, when it comes to some of the other MMA that is going on this weekend, down in Miami on Friday, you have Fight Time 37. You know, there's some names on this fight card that are familiar to me. Reggie Pena is one of those fighters. He's a 13-6, a guy I've had a chance to see compete before in the XFC. He's won three in a row, and one of those wins did come back in World Series of Fighting in 2014. Actually, his last fight came back in 2015 against Sabah Hamasi, of course, now in the UFC. Of course, he'll be taking on Jose Caceres in the main event of that fight card, welterweight title fight. Also on Friday, you have NFC 98 that is going on up there in Atlanta, Georgia, at Center Stage. That NFC is a promotion that actually Legacy LFA uses to help book the cards when they go to the state of Georgia. Speaking of LFA, they've got a card on Friday night, LFA 18. This is a matchup that's going to be featuring a featherweight title fight, Kevin Aguilar against Justin Rader. Also, you got Brennan Allen returning to take on Chris Harris in a 185-pound matchup, so that should be a nice card there on Access TV on Friday night. On Saturday, you've got ONE Championship. It's going to be headlined by Bibian Fernandez defending the bantamweight title against Andrew Leone. Also, flyweight title matchup, a part of that fight card I mentioned. You've got the ACB card on Saturday starting at 10 a.m. That fight card will be on Fight, so you can watch that out for free. Also on Saturday, you have M1 Challenge 82, and it's going to be headlined by a name you probably remember, a guy we have not seen in a long time, and that is Mikhail Zayats. Yeah, you remember Mikhail Zayats from his time in Bellator? We have not seen him since 2014, well over 3 years since the last time we saw him when he lost to King Mo there in the light heavyweight tournament back at Bellator 110. So interested to see how Mikhail Zayats fares in his return to competition. Also on Saturday, you have New England Fights 30. Matt Peterson and the boys always put on great fight cards up there in Bangor, Maine. Ryan Sanders, Jay Ellis, a part of that fight card. Of course, I think a lot of people know Ryan Sanders. Also, of course, mentioned, you know, Josh Marsh is going to be on CFFC 66. That is on Saturday night. Jonathan Webb is on that fight card, a guy that maybe ultimately maybe see get back into the UFC on his road to get back there. So that is some of the MMA that is going on this weekend. As I mentioned, myself and Daniel Galvan will have a preview podcast coming up on Friday. We will preview UFC Fight Night, Moreno versus Pettis, and we'll be looking for that fight card. It's a I think I'm going to be home on Saturday night, so going to be checking out those fights. If I'm not home, I will check them out on DVR. But should be I think it's a fight card that probably is not going to have a lot of buzz, but maybe the fights ultimately end up delivering for the UFC on Saturday night. So a ton of things going on in MMA. I should mention next Saturday, you've got the Bellator event in Bristol, a part of the Monster Energy NASCAR deal that they've got going on. Looking to have a fighter from that fight card on next week's episode of the podcast. So be sure to check that out. Of course, if you're not subscribed to this podcast, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. Just search The MMA Report. I really appreciate if you do subscribe to this podcast. And if there's any fighter that you want to hear or someone in the MMA industry that you want to hear on this podcast, just tweet at me at Jason_Floyd, and I'll do the best I can to get that fighter on this podcast. So that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which you always hear on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
At least some of your ego is invested in your Facebook timeline. Okay. How many people post, "I was wrong, I'm a fucking idiot"? How many people on Facebook go, "You know what? I've been rethinking things and I'm a douchebag"? Oh, shit. You know, it's like when you walk by the mirror in the bathroom and you see yourself real quick and you stop and you look. And the person on the other side would be going to you like, "I can't believe you just posted that." So you have this alter ego, this Facebook timeline. And another thing about Facebook, as you can see, it is the theme of tonight. And we'll have some fun with it, I promise. It really, truly, and honestly is a monument to yourself. And I don't mean you're doing this or I'm doing this or anybody's doing this consciously, like, "Well, when I die, I want people to go all the way back to my Facebook page and they can see the last 38 years of my life played out in pictures and posts and videos and laugh." It is literally you. Not literally you, of course. It's is a digital library of the life that you have led. You're politically fired up and angry. You're a complete and utter whatever. Fill in the goddamn blank. Fill in the blank. Okay. People take pride in being obnoxious or being sarcastic on Facebook. And the show isn't just about Facebook, but the show is about, I honestly think, if it is legal to secure your rights to your Facebook page so it can somehow live in cyberspace forever, maybe not on their same routers and all that shit. I don't know that digital end of it, but I'm wondering about, is your information about you your property? There is something about Facebook And I know all the conspiracy attached to it and the ownership and where all of this information must be funneling to. There must be this amazing digital library of my life. Yes, that's what I'm talking about. If I go on Facebook, I can, you can realize pretty much my political opinions. You can sit there and go, oh, I didn't know he had, he's divorced. Oh, you know, and you go through all those things. It is kind of an information packet on your life. Who owns that?
Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.